Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark and Mark, Daly and Hamilton here to recap the first Grand Prix of the 2021 Formula One World Championship. Mark, after all those weeks and months of waiting, Bahrain is in the bag. And, it's interesting, but before I get your thoughts on this, I did run a little bit of a poll here. Well, not a little bit of a poll. I ran a poll on our Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod. And I must admit, I'm a little bit surprised at the feedback that this one generated. So I put that the poll was, the choices were, I should say, loved it, hated it, and meh. So, okay, so loved it is currently leading the poll at just under 69%. Hated it. 5.3%, kind of surprised that there were some hated it, and meh, weighed in at a surprising 26 and a bit percent. Now I find the meh, a little bit surprising, considering that those last several laps were actually kind of intense there, and there was plenty of good action throughout the race, all up and down the entire field. So, maybe if you wait in meh, maybe you can elaborate and send us a tweet or send us an email and just elaborate, because I find that a little bit surprising. But look at this. You're sitting there wearing the Lewis Hamilton special edition lid. I see it's on. For people that are watching on YouTube might appreciate this a little bit more, but I just got to do something here and we can get underway at the show.
Oh.
So if this is the way it's going to be, now I'll just, for everybody that's listening to the audio feed, Mark's wearing the Mercedes cap. I just put on my Red Bull cap. I got Mercedes, I got Ferrari, I got them all. But it just seems sort of fitting that for two guys that tend to see eye to eye on most things, I have the feeling that we should probably try and mix it up a little bit. But Mark, I've kind of been rambling on here to start the start of the show here, but let's get your two cents. What did you think of the opening round of the season?
So 105 days since the last race in Abu Dhabi, and boy, did that winter go by fast. And like you, I was super pumped and super excited for this weekend, but I'll be very honest. I think I probably speak for that 30% of the listener base that wasn't totally enthralled with this race or this weekend. And for me, I think part of it is I was super emotionally invested, and I know we'll get to it, but I was super invested in Aston Martin this weekend, and this was a horror show. It was a horror show for Sebastian Vettel. I think Lance had a mediocre weekend. He qualified 10th. He finished 10th. Aston Martin picked up a single point. I thought that was disappointing. I think the midfield is what we thought it was going to be. It was a little bit broader. It expanded, and Ferrari was okay. But you know what? At the end of the day, like, if you hadn't watched the race and you just looked at the race classification afterwards and you saw Lewis and you saw Max and you saw Valtteri, you'd think nothing had changed. Nothing had changed. And you're right. The last couple of laps were pretty exciting. But for me, at the end of the day, and I get it that this isn't supposed to be the transformational year that 2022 is supposed to be. And I know people are really excited and very, very enthusiastic about the outcome of the race and the circumstances of the race. But for me, I look at that race classification and I see Hamilton and I see Max. And it's not like Max wasn't competitive last year. He won a couple races. He DNF'd five times. He probably would have been in the mix a couple more times. Valtteri, and again, I know it wasn't all entirely his fault. He's 4 years back from them. And then Lando Norris is back from them. And then the rest of the midfield's almost a minute off the pace. Like, for me, it's like, what changed? And it was the same outcome. It was the same mix at the top. It wasn't good enough. And again, I know people are excited, and that's great. Let's carry that momentum. Let's carry that excitement into the next race weekend. But I think some of the things that I was so eager to see this race weekend didn't happen. And I think a big part of that was going to be Aston Martin being part of the mix. And, I talk so much about my concerns about Sebastian Vettel. He got a five-place grid penalty in qualifying, and ultimately he made a terrible mistake and and rear-ended another car by locking up his brakes. I think it was Esteban Ocon. Like, for me, it wasn't the race weekend that I expected. So I kind of feel for that 30% of the listener base. What about you?
Well, I must admit that I was very disappointed in what we saw with Aston Martin. But let's give a little bit of context. Let's just run down the final race classification. So we got Lewis on top, of course, winning the race. You got Max in second place, less than a second behind, only three quarters of a second behind Lewis. You have Valtteri in third, you know, way back, you know, almost 40 seconds behind. Then you had Lando Norris at arm's length, Sergio Perez in fifth. You know, I think a little bit of context needs to be sort of drawn to that
because we should talk about.
You definitely need to talk about that. Sergio having some technical gremlins hitting him right before the start of the race, ends up starting from the pit lane. And I'm getting ahead of myself if I go any further. P6, we have Charles Leclerc. P7, Danny Ricciardo. P8, Carlos Sainz. P9, I think one of the highlights of the day, Yuki Tsunoda and the AlphaTauri, an exciting, very, very solid performance from the Japanese rookie in the AlphaTauri.
Yuki is going to be a rock star. He is going to be a superstar.
I certainly hope so. I was very impressed with what I saw from Yuki Tsunoda. He had pace, he had racecraft, he had composure. Very, very mature performance for such a young man. P10, we have Lance Stroll in the only Aston Martin to make it into the points, way back off of the pace. Just only a couple of seconds in front of Kimi Raikkonen in the first of the two Alfa Romeos. P12 is Antonio Giovinazzi. 13th, Esteban Ocon. 14th, George Russell. P15 was Sebastian Vettel. A lap down. Giovinazzi was the first of the classified cars to be lapped. And then finally, we had Mick Schumacher in the Haas making his debut. And then the cars that were classified as DNF was Pierre Gasly, who looked very good in qualifying, had a pretty good opening quarter of the opening lap before losing his front wing. And that was one of my disappointments of the day. I thought that Gasly had the potential to really kind of mix it up in the best of the rest. Nick Latifi and the Williams, Fernando Alonso with what was it, brake problem, suspected brake failure, I think it was. And then the first car that didn't even make it past the first corner, and this was just kind of a replay of what happened the entire weekend, was the second Haas rookie, Nikita Mazepin, who had had lots of difficulty.
I promised myself I wouldn't laugh when you made that joke because it's so bad.
It's so bad, but unfortunately, it was quite a, you know, kind of sums up his weekend, it's corny. There's another way to put it. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, like you say, when you look at that, especially that podium, it doesn't look like that anything had changed. I mean, especially when you see that, you know, you got Verstappen between Hamilton and Bottas, then his teammate, you know, he's top five, but a mile back. Let's just talk about the start of the race, because that really sort of really set things up. I mean, Perez obviously didn't qualify all that great in the Red Bull to begin with. Max putting it on pole position ahead of his rivals, and Max and Lewis. I thought to start the race, they both started fairly evenly. I thought they had good starts to the race. Max held his composure, got into the first corner, and despite some of the antics, and you know, we saw the safety car because of Mazepin's spin and getting stuck in the gravel, and then shortly after they got back to racing, a very short virtual safety car. And so it took, you know, it kind of had like that first race of the season kind of jitters just based on some of the stuff we saw in the opening couple of laps. But once they sort of really settled into it, my immediate reaction was, my God, these Red Bulls have pace. This is something that we haven't seen from them, over the past couple of years. They've always been at arm's length. Max, even on his, best days, was, at arm's length. And, the one thing that gets lost when you just look at that final race classification is the fact that lead did change hands a couple of times.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So you make a good point. And I think I probably, with my initial rant or my hot take off the top, I probably dismissed out of hand Perez's performance. And you're right. You know, if he'd been able to start on the grid, and you're right, he didn't qualify well. He qualified 11th right behind Stroll. But again, he was only a 10th of a second out of qualifying for 9th in front of Fernando Alonso. But ultimately, he seems to thrive when he has these weird starts. Obviously, we saw this in Bahrain last year when he ultimately won a race, and then we saw it again today. So I think if you calculate in the fact that Sergio started from the pit lane and he still finished finished fifth, and he was still only 6 seconds behind Lando and still only 17, 18 seconds behind Bottas. That does certainly bode very, very, very well for Red Bull. That said, obviously, they're second in the Constructors' Championship right now. So I think that's pretty interesting. I think the one other point, too, and I know we'll get beaten up by our listeners if we don't mention this, and I know there was a lot of hot fury about this online, but that Mazepin start is unacceptable. And, you know, I was talking to my good buddy just a couple of days ago, and his specific point was like, look, that the risk isn't him damaging his car or putting himself into trouble. The risk is that he is so unqualified to be driving a Formula One car, he risks the health of the other drivers. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He spun out just a couple of hundred meters from the front of the track. And fortunately, he was the back clear of any other vehicles. But he is literally a liability to other drivers at this point. And ultimately, he's qualified to be in Formula One because he has a super license. He did what he needed to do in the lower championships and the lower formulas to get this. But he looks really poor. And I think a lot of this goes back to the fact that winter testing was too short. And mm-hmm. I think next year, we're going to see a longer winter testing. It would have benefited Vettel. It would have benefited Perez. It would have benefited Mazepin. But yeah, that Mazepin start was poor. He simply doesn't, I think, yet understand the grip or how to rotate these cars or manage the back end. But my fear is that he's going to be in a position where he could hurt other drivers or impact or compromise somebody else's race. But ultimately, he's not going to qualify particularly well. So he's not going to necessarily impact the race of somebody at the front. But yeah, you're right. There's definitely some interesting things. And if you look at the race classification, right? Like Hamilton jumps to first, qualified second. Bottas qualified third, finishes third. Great race for Lando. He qualified seventh, finishes fourth. Sergio Perez qualified 11th and then got stuck from a pit lane start and finishes fifth. That's a great start. Charles slipped a couple of spots. Ricardo slipped a spot. Sainz finished where he qualified. Yuki managed to move up four spots. And again, first Japanese racer to score points since 2012. First rookie driver to score points in his opening race. And who knows? Like there was all sorts of firsts associated with that guy. So you're right. As much as I'm disappointed with the outcome, at least in terms of the podium, there's still a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll do so as we take our first break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. Mark and Mark here, breaking down the Bahrain Grand Prix. Round one is in the bag and only now, what, 22 races to go if, you know, touch wood, all goes well here. But got a couple of weeks off. It's, you know, 3 weeks until we get to Imola on the 18th of April. And well, that's a little bit too much of a gap so early in the season, but it is what it is. Definitely this left me somewhat salivating for a rematch between Lewis and Max Verstappen. You know, one of the big things I think we need to address right now, we've kind of glanced over some of the issues and stories going in, you know, that happened at the race day in the first segment. But I think the one thing that really bears talking about now is one of the big talking points that really came up at the end of the race was all this track limit thing at turn four. And, you know, I find it's really quite frustrating. And, you know, we did have a couple of emails on on this topic. One of them was from Paul Edgar, and very well spoken. The one thing that that Paul had to say, he kind of sums it up nicely. He says, "This won't sit well with the fans. I'm sure it doesn't sit well with someone who's been a fan for decades. Race control or Red Bull control crew screwed this race. I only hope it gets better from here." So just to explain a little bit more, and thanks for the email, Paul. That we should explain was that they had designated the track limits at turn four, and times were deleted here and there. And this is one of these things, if they're tightening up on the track limits, it's not just for practice, it's not just for qualifying, it's not just for the race or a portion of the race. It's got to be the whole damn weekend, right? And the thing is that that I find really interesting about it was the Mercedes cars that were really pushing it, going over the curbs and exploiting those track limits throughout the race. They were warned from the pit wall not to do it because they were expecting to get a warning from race control at some point. And I find that it was very strange that they allowed it to go on so long as they did before that warning finally came, because like I say, it's either in effect or it isn't, right? And that's why I think when it finally came down to that that battle between Max and Lewis right at the very end of the race in those last couple of laps, and the track really flows through that section. Max was doing everything to get around Lewis. It was a great dice between the two. Don't get me wrong. And then so Max got the position. A couple of corners later, he gave it back. And it is interesting because some of the things that came out in the aftermath of that was Christian Horner said that it was the right thing for Max to do to give the position back. Max said he would have preferred to keep going. He felt he had the pace. Maybe he felt he could open up, see if he could open up a couple of second gap, maybe 5 seconds or and hope for the best, and then maybe get a time penalty, which probably also wouldn't look good in the eye of the new fans, if he gets the race winner has his, penalized and loses it. And then Toto Wolff, team principal of Mercedes, said that the track limit rules can't be what he called a Shakespeare novel, saying that they have to be sacred. I don't discount, and I don't want to take away any of the sincerity, the sincerity and the genuineness of what Toto Wolff is trying to say. However, to me, it rings a little bit hollow when it was his cars pushing the limits, and throughout the race before that warning finally came to guys, cool it. You can't do that anymore. If you do it again, you're going to be in trouble. And then ultimately, they benefit from it because the one time that Max really pushed it, although he was kind of pushing a little bit too at one point, before he was even challenging it. But it seemed kind of ironic that by the time it came down to it, like the real turning point on the race happened at turn four, and it was all about those the track limits there. So very interesting comments coming from not only within Red Bull but also from Mercedes. But on this, I did say that I find that Toto's comments ring hollow for me. I do think that he's being sincere. But I do agree with him that, they have to be what he said, sacred. That's why I say, if they're going to enforce track limits at a particular section of a track, each and every Grand Prix weekend, they have to do it right from the start, right till the checkered flag is waved at the end of the race on Sunday. There can't be any other way. Otherwise, it comes across as Bush League, right?
Yeah, Will Buxton had a tweet, and I should retweet this, but he had a tweet earlier today that said, track limits. The problem, as I've always seen it, is that the second you make allowances, you create the opportunity for confusion and inconsistency.
Yes.
All four wheels over the line is either permitted or it's not. It needs to be black or in white. You can't be half pregnant. And somebody else kind of followed up with a great comment as well and basically said, look, it's like Hamilton said on the radio, earlier in the race, the track limits weren't there. And as a racer, I'm going to exploit that if it's not being enforced. And I don't necessarily blame Hamilton Bottas because they kind of began to respect track limits when they started to regulate and govern it a little bit more closely. But as a driver, if they're not doing that, I am going to exploit that and I'm going to push the 100%. Limits as far as I can.
Yep.
And I don't blame them for that. But I do blame the stewards for not enforcing it from the jump, right? You can't allow Hamilton and Bottas to potentially carve out a lead by exploiting track limits for 20 or 30 laps before you start governing it. And then you basically compromise potentially Max's win because he knows at that stage in the race, he's going to have to give back the spot or get a penalty. You know what I mean? Like, so as far as the listener's concerned, and it was Paul, I believe.
Yes.
Totally. And one, thank you, Paul, for the email. That's fantastic. But totally agree. Like this has to be black and white. There can be absolutely no discussion about it.
Yeah, and I think that Will Buxton's tweet, is perfect. It sums it up. I mean, it either is an infringement or it's not. And like you say, I mean, I'm not going to hate on Lewis or Valtteri for pushing the limits and trying to gain that because I mean, you're going to try and pick up speed and time where you can. And if you're getting away with it and they're not enforcing it, why wouldn't you do it? And I mean, like I say, I think Max was doing the same thing a couple of times that I saw on the feed during the race. So they're all going to do it. It's just it's the inconsistency that I think that just drives everybody rightfully crazy and the lack of application by the race stewards. So I think that's absolutely a fail on the part of the stewards. But also to pick up on Paul's point was from Red Bull from the pit wall, and perhaps this was the case. You know, we don't know. I mean, we can sit here and sort of speculate about it, but when you see all these behind the scene footage on Drive to Survive and things like that, it seems like Christian Horner will protest at anything. It's like, well, no, those aren't the official socks that the Mercedes guys are supposed to be wearing with their uniforms this year. And they launch a protest about it. It just seems kind of interesting that, and again, I mean, we haven't heard anything to the contrary that they weren't on the radio to Michael Massey, the race director. It was like, what about track limits? Maybe this will come out in the wash, but it seems a little bit funny too that they weren't more vociferous about it. But also in defense of Christian Horner, I mean, I can see why he would see that Max giving the place back was the right thing to do, I guess, in terms of sportsmanship and playing fairly by the rules. I don't know, what's your take on Max saying that he felt like he should have gone on and taken his chances, and if it came up under investigation, and then maybe see what happens at the end of the race if he's given a time penalty? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I wish he had. I absolutely wish he had. I think the consideration was that given the state of Hamilton's tires, there was a very strong likelihood that he probably could have found a way past him anyways, and then this whole conversation would have been moot. But I think from Verstappen's perspective, he felt confident that he could have built a 5-second gap in the laps that were the few laps that remained. And ultimately, if they did choose to penalize him, which I think probably would have happened, it probably would have been a 5-second time penalty, and he still would have won the race. Now, I think, to some of your earlier points, I think the optics of that to the broader viewership would not have been ideal, right? Like, so he did cheat, but he still won, and he was given a penalty, but it wasn't sufficient to cost him the race win. So I think the outcome was probably the desirable one in terms of not brewing up too much controversy on the first race weekend of the year. But I kind of wish he pushed, and again, I respect the fact that he has enough respect for Christian Horner in that organization that he's going to listen to them. And I think there's probably a lot of drivers out there that wouldn't have done that in those circumstances. But ultimately, I think just for the sheer entertainment spectacle, I wish he'd done it. But ultimately, I can appreciate why it potentially would have been a little bit damaging for the sport. From your perspective, would you like to have seen him push? And I made the move. I'm all in. I've got nothing to lose but a 5-second time penalty, and I might just finish second, because he's not going to finish worse than second no matter what the penalty is. They're not going to give him a 37.8 or 37.383 second penalty to bump him back to third. But do you think he did the right thing then, or would you like to have seen a different outcome?
Well, I definitely have a thought on this, and I'm going to weigh in on it just after we take another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We're breaking down the 2021 opening Grand Prix of the year at Bahrain. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. We're recapping all the action from the Sakhir International Circuit for the opening round of the 2021 Formula One World Championship at the Bahrain Grand Prix on Sunday. And just before we went to the break, we were just talking about Max Verstappen and the whole incident where he had to, when he tried to pass Lewis Hamilton a couple of laps from the end of the race and then ended up having to give the position back. And Mark, you threw it back at me. I asked you what you thought about that, whether he should have pushed on for and taken his chances with the time penalty and maybe losing the race that way, or whether or not giving the place back to Lewis was the right thing to do. And honestly, in the moment, I thought that he should have pushed on. But after having a couple of corners worth to kind of digest it, and then I thought that it probably was the right thing to do. You know, it is interesting because you know, Max was saying afterwards on race radio. It said, quote, "Why didn't you let me go? I could have easily got the 5 seconds. I prefer to lose like that than to be second like this," end quote. And apparently race radio, race control was right away on the radio to the pit wall at Red Bull, saying that he had exceeded the track limits. He'd have to give the position back. So I think, you know, I mean, in the heat of the moment, it's a little bit different. But when you have this perspective to hear what immediately happened, that it probably was the right thing to do. I mean, it's a bit of a, it's kind of one of those situations, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I mean, he could have maybe gone on and won the Grand Prix and then taken his chances with the penalty. But like you say, it would have left a bit of a bitter taste in the mouth. And especially for the Gen DTS, all these new people to the sport that are like really excited and checking out maybe their first Grand Prix ever, would just would have been a completely confusing situation. Not that that weighed into the decision from the race control to, you know, hand or tell him to give the spot back. But it was a bit messy. And like we were saying a little while ago, it all comes down to the inconsistent, you know, application of, you know, the track limits at turn four. So, I mean, this whole incident, I really lay squarely at the race director, at the stewards, that they should have been right from the very first lap of the race, right to the very end, that they should have been more consistent with it. But, you know, it was interesting too, just to hear some of the feedback afterwards from Lewis and from Max Verstappen. You know, Lewis said that the last couple of laps of the race were horrifying. Obviously, Max, his tires were, what, about 10 laps newer, fresher than Lewis's at that point. And he was really pushing as, you know, fast as he could. I mean, he basically very politely told his race engineer to keep quiet. Said, "Leave it up to me, Bono," or something like that at that point. But, you know, it was really, you know, it's something we're not used to seeing, right? And even though that perhaps a lot of people would have liked to seen Max Verstappen win that race, the one thing is that we're not used to seeing Lewis have to really fight off a rival like that. And hopefully this is just not that one incident that we're talking about at the end of the year saying, oh, you know, that would have been great if Max could have, you know, attacked and fought Lewis all season long. And then, you know, before Mercedes kind of got back into their groove and started dominating again. I mean, let's just, you know, cross fingers and all that and hope that this is just a taste of things to come, because I felt it really quite exciting. And I thought the buildup over the course of the entire race, as they kind of changed position due to pit stops and undercuts and overcuts and all the, you know, all the strategy that were going on, the battle of the minds between Red Bull and Mercedes, I thought it really made it intriguing.
It was definitely a different conclusion. And it's funny, as you were talking, I kind of had a flashback too. I can't remember if it was the British GP or the 70th anniversary Silverstone GP last year, but we had a similar circumstance last year where Max was hunting down Hamilton in the last few laps, and Hamilton ultimately had a puncture but still managed to limp across the line. The circumstances here were different, right? Like, mm-hmm. They were both healthy cars. Hamilton's tires were dramatically older, I think 10 or 11 laps older than Verstappen's. And we should probably point out to our listeners that are new to Formula One that the tires that these cars run are very different than the tires you go and throw on your Volkswagen Tiguan or on your Ford Explorer every couple of years. These tires are designed to last a fraction of a race. We talk about compounds, and compounds are the chemical composition of the tires, but they're designed to become very, very sticky when hot, which helps provide a significant amount of grip to the car, but ultimately they deteriorate very, very quickly. So in the case of Hamilton v. Max today, Hamilton's tires were only 11 laps older, but that would be the equivalent of 5 years of road wear on a traditional road car. Like, they're massively older. And that's why Max was able to catch up to Hamilton so aggressively over those last couple of laps. And ultimately, that's why it's so remarkable that Hamilton was able to keep his position. And I think we saw, and I think it was the second to last lap, you saw Hamilton go super wide on a corner, because as your tires begin to deteriorate to the kind of the extent that Hamilton's were, you can't corner as quickly, which means that you have to take corners more slowly. You don't have as much braking power, so you have to start your braking zone much, much earlier than you would otherwise have done so. And it ultimately gives a car that has newer tires the opportunity to get past you in a corner, or to ultimately kind of overtake you on a straight, because you have to start braking much, much, much earlier. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But yeah, so I don't want to downplay or contradict what I said off the top. I still thought as a whole, this was an underwhelming race weekend for the reasons that I stated. I think the conclusion of the race, the battle between Hamilton and Max, is exactly what the sport needs. And I hope we see a ton of this throughout the season. And I was just, and I know you're going to get there, but I was just looking at the Constructors' Championship, and I was just looking at the driver's title. Hamilton picked up 25 points today versus Max, who picked up 18. Holy moly, that's 7 incredibly important points. And ultimately, this is a championship that could come down to 5 or 10 points, right? Mm-hmm. And for Hamilton to be able to hold back Max, you know what? 6, 7, 8 months from now, we could be looking back on this weekend as the reason why Hamilton was able to hold off Max. And ultimately, maybe he wins by 100 points. But again, these could be 7 crucial, crucial points in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just quickly run down the driver's standings after the first round of the season. It's pretty straightforward, obviously, with only one race in the bag. As you said, Lewis on top with 25 points. Max Verstappen second with 18. Valtteri Bottas from Mercedes, 16. For P3, Lando Norris. I think Lando had a very solid weekend, a very solid race. I mean, really outpaced
great
his teammate.
Race. Great weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. He's fourth with 12th, and Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull rounds out the top five with 10 points. And then, of course, on the constructors, we'll just run down the top five. Mercedes on top with 41 points. Red Bull second with 28. And then, of course, I mean, that really highlights the fact that Perez was not able to qualify well, and then ultimately run as far as he wanted, or as good as and as high in the race order as he wanted to during the race. And I mean, he did very well to get back to where he did. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from him, but I mean, that's already I wouldn't say substantial, but it's a noticeable difference, just that gap in the constructors. And then P3, McLaren, 18 points, Ferrari, 12 points, and then AlphaTauri, 2 points that were earned today by Yuki Tsunoda. And let's just switch gears here, Mark. I'm going to start it now before we go into the break here. Lando Norris, I think he looked really, really good. He was kind of scrapping with his teammate in the opening laps of the race, but he quickly found his groove. I think he looked very, very competitive. Obviously, there's a big gap between McLaren and Mercedes and Red Bull at the moment. But I liked what I saw from Norris. I liked what I saw from Ricciardo to a lesser extent. But on the whole, I felt it was a pretty positive weekend for McLaren.
Yeah, excellent weekend for Lando Norris. And I don't give this kid enough credit, because he doesn't have the same... He doesn't have the same room presence, and he doesn't have the same kind of loud personality that maybe some of these younger drivers have. And I think he's probably going to be overshadowed a little bit this year, just because he's racing on the same team as Daniel Ricciardo. But I thought McLaren put in a great weekend. And, you know, Daniel slipped a place in the race classification versus qualifying. Ultimately, he qualified 6th and fell to 7th. But Lando qualified 7th and moved up to 4th. He had a fantastic weekend. He looked incredibly composed. His racecraft was excellent. His His tire management was great. I love the way that he was rotating the back end of the car, particularly in the later stages of the race when his tires were more compromised. I thought he looked fantastic out there. I also got a good chuckle out of that one point where he waved a Latifi as he was overtaking Latifi at some stage during the race. I just thought he had a great weekend. And you know, you're right. Like, we predicted, or I think we predicted ultimately, that it was going to be a Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren 1-2-3 in the Constructors Championship. And it's probably no surprise that after the first race weekend, that's exactly what we ultimately saw. But I thought he looks great. I think he's going to be an absolute rock star. I haven't given him enough credit over the last couple of years. I thought he was a very consistent, very solid, very reliable driver who doesn't become overly emotional, doesn't typically make mistakes. He's very good in the early stages of races in terms of tire management when those tires are cold. And again, for our listeners, the beginning stages of the race can be a little bit tricky because your tires are a little bit colder. They're not up to temperature. You have to manage them a little bit differently. He's typically very good in the early stages of the race, and that definitely played into his hands today. But man, I thought McLaren put in a very, very, very solid race weekend, and they came out of this race weekend with 18 points, and I don't think they're going to complain about that.
Well, definitely not. I think that at least based on the first race of the year, that Danny Ricciardo might be breathing a sigh of relief, you know, getting a P7, bringing home some points, a double point finish for his team, where his old team, Alpine / Renault, Esteban Ocon was a very unimpressive 13th. And of course, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that Fernando Alonso, didn't even finish the race. He wasn't even classified at, because of brake issues or whatever it was. So I think at least based on the first race of the season, Danny Ricciardo must be breathing a sigh of relief. Anyways, we're going to take one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. We're going to come back and just tidy up a couple of other things I want to talk about, and just wanted to get your thoughts on Ferrari. Also, just want to talk quickly about Fernando Alonso and whatever else we've got. Got one more email from the mailbag. We'll talk about all that in just a moment, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And Mark, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Ferrari. My initial take was, okay, they weren't as horrible as they were to start last year's season, but not really lighting any fires or really anything super exciting from them. I mean, Charles Leclerc had his moments, but ultimately, I mean, he finished sixth, so well down the race order. A decent result from his teammate, Carlos Sainz, making his debut for Ferrari. He finished in P8, but let's face it, at the end of the day, sixth and eighth really aren't the reason why Ferrari go racing, why they're in Formula One. So ultimately, I'd have to say that this is very, very disappointing for them.
It's funny because I thought especially Leclerc qualified relatively well. He qualified on the second row, which was nice to see. Again, still 7/10 off Max. Max qualified extraordinarily well, but I thought he looked pretty good in qualifying. Ultimately, Carlos wasn't as good in qualifying. I think he was 4/10 or half a second behind Leclerc, which wasn't ideal. And I think that's probably something that you and I predicted. And I think everyone predicted that Leclerc was going to put in some better performances this year just because of his familiarity with the car, etc. But ultimately, I thought Ferrari looked relatively racy in the early going in this race. And then they seemed to just, they tailed off. Fall back.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought the chemistry was obviously good, and I thought that the decision making was very good, but yeah, their pace just seemed to fall off very, very, very quickly. And I can't determine whether it was tire decision or if it was strategy or what, but you saw in qualifying that they had the ability to be much faster in the straights than they were. And I can't for the life of me to put together why there was such a disconnect, especially for Leclerc between qualifying the race. And again, it wasn't a disaster. They both finished in the points. points. That was probably better than I think they would have done last year. They're fourth in the championship right now. But ultimately, yeah, they looked racy and then they just kind of fell off. So definitely not the Ferrari of 18, definitely not the Ferrari of 19, definitely not the Ferrari of 20, but also not necessarily the team that I thought they could possibly be. And I think if you look back to our predictions last week, we kind of thought like, hey, their ceiling's probably third, their basement's probably sixth. They're kind of in there somewhere, but I was just a little bit disappointed because of Leclerc's strong qualifying, strong start, and then the fact that they just kind of fell back, and I don't really know why.
Yeah, the other thing I couldn't help but think during the race was that, maybe once Ricardo gets a couple of races under his belt, he really settles into the team, he really gets used to and familiar to the car, that delta between him and Lando Norris is going to close. Because, I mean, Norris, he's been with the team for a couple of years. I mean, season three for him now. I mean, he's not a rookie anymore. He's got his sophomore year under his belt. I mean, he's a seasoned Formula One driver. He's got a lot of races under his belt now. The thing that he has in his benefit is the fact that he's used to the car, he's used to the team, whereas Ricardo, he's had limited chance to drive this car like everybody else, making a switch this year and limited, miles during testing and all that. And I couldn't help but think, especially when you hear some of the comments of Charles Leclerc saying that he was very surprised that the pace that McLaren have. I mean, we have to remember that they're running Mercedes power now compared to Renault that they've had for the past couple of seasons. And I think that obviously was a big boost. So I think that there's a lot of potential to see from Ricardo. I think that McLaren is right about where they want to be. And I think that maybe under certain circumstances, I mean, Norris was running as high as third at one point. I mean, I would definitely think that if things work their way, that they could probably get a couple of podiums this year under the right circumstances. And knowing Ricardo and the good racing driver that he is, I expect to see him kind of percolate up through the race order a little bit too. I still think it's obviously going to be Mercedes and Red Bull, and that's going to sort of shift around. It might go back and forth all season, but I think that and of course it's a very small sample, but I think that is a very positive what we saw from McLaren right now. But I don't want to dump too much on Ferrari. They definitely have made some progress from this time last year. The thing is that it's baby steps. It's not like a huge sort of quantum leap back to the top of the grid to compete with Red Bull, compete with Mercedes, where we've been used to seen them over the past number of years. So, this is still going to be one of these sort of, I guess, in between year. Maybe they might have the opportunity to do something if things go their way. I kind of want to all this science and engineering and planning that goes into Formula One, I kind of hate to throw the random sort of variable of, well, luck. If that luck goes their way, that they might get a result. But honestly, that might be just they're only real hope the way that things are, and then really throw their lot in with the new cars that are going to debut next year.
And just to add to that, I think Ferrari has been very clear that their expectations for this year are muted, right? Like we talk about them if they should be competing for podiums. I think Ferrari has very effectively projected this understanding that they're building for 2022.
Yes.
And if they secure some podiums this year, great. But I think anything they achieve this year is gravy. And they've been very good about kind of projecting that image. So 2022 is what they're working towards. And you're right, this is kind of like a gap year for them. And if they score some points and they finish in the top five, that's great. It's just something else to build on. But I don't think internally they have any expectations that they're going to be competing for a championship this year, not by a long shot.
No, I totally agree. I think you raise a great point. And just to be clear, this is not something new. This just wasn't, Mattia Binotto after the end of the Bahrain Grand Prix just coming out, oh, guys, this is not going to be our year. We're really looking forward to next year. He's been saying this over the months, even going back to last year, and other the big wigs at Ferrari have been saying the same thing, that we're going to do our best to get this thing turned around, but ultimately we don't expect to become really competitive to a year or two, maybe down the road, even certainly not until the new cars and the new format debuts in 2022. So it's positive steps compared to where they were at the start of the 2020 season, but ultimately I think if you're a Ferrari fan, you're maybe encouraged but a very, very small degree. Anyways, I just want to move on to Alpine and talk quickly about Fernando Alonso. I thought that, you know, ultimately from him, it was disappointing that he retired. He did say that he felt he had fun. I mean, he claimed P9 in qualifying. I thought it was a pretty decent comeback for a guy that's been out of Formula One for a couple of years. I mean, he looked, I mean, he was mixing it up there, you know, when he was out on the track, and then just, you know, just fell away, completely disappeared, and ultimately retired. but I think, you know, it was a decent return for the two-time world champion.
Excellent, excellent. For again, despite the way that the weekend ended, and I believe there was some debris that got trapped in one of his brake ducts, but I think the race weekend was a success. Ultimately, he gets to Q3 in his first race weekend back. He qualifies P9 ahead of Lance Stroll, which is incredibly, incredibly frustrating for Aston Martin fans and those that have really become emotionally invested in that team, as I have. And I think if you're Lawrence Stroll, you're probably spinning in your grave, although I think he's probably still alive and well. So he's probably spinning in his office. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe sounds like he is a Monty Python sketch.
Exactly. But I thought it was a great weekend. And you know, you look at his sectors in Q1, Q2, and Q3 of qualifying, he looked excellent. He was only 0.3 seconds out of qualifying P7, which would have been absurd. And ultimately, he looked relatively racy and stable and reliable on track. And unfortunately, it was ultimately just a mechanical failure that cost him a race classification. But, you know, given the fact that, to your point, that he's been out of the sport for 2 years, hasn't been in a Formula One car in a competitive way in 27, 28, 30 months, I thought it was a very, very solid race weekend. And it's not just that he was out of the sport for two full seasons, but this is a guy that's 40 years old, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy who was racing in Formula One when some of these kids were literally in their crib, right?
Oh, exactly.
I thought it was ultimately a very good weekend for him to come back. And I think it was a statement weekend, and I think he would love to have finished in the points. I think that would have been excellent. He's going to finish in the points a lot this year, but I think this was a bit of a statement weekend that he could come back after 2.5 years in a mediocre car and qualify P9 was a pretty, pretty good message to send to the rest of the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he must have listened to our podcast the other day when I picked him to finish behind his teammate Esteban Ocon, but but seriously, you know, the thing was that the question that I was really interested was, a couple of them was, of course, you know, he's been, like you say, out of Formula One for a couple of years. He's 40. By saying that I expected to see him finish behind his teammate Esteban Ocon was more to the point is, how big is that gap going to be? Now, I must admit that I was very, very surprised that Esteban did not make it out of Q1. He qualified 16th. Fernando goes on to, like you say, qualify P9, and in the race, Ocon, he finishes that race, but he didn't really, I mean, the only real thing of note that Ocon did during the race was get rear-ended by Sebastian Vettel into turn one. Totally. I mean, he had a very anonymous performance on Sunday.
And his qualifying was poor.
It was.
And again, maybe there's some mitigating circumstances, but he qualified P16 with a 131 8 or something terrible. I just want to interject because I thought this was kind of funny. And I sent you this on Instagram, by the way, but you've never once responded to one of my Instagram messages. So I'm going to assume you forgot your password.
I'm the worst Instagrammer in the entire world. Guilty as charged.
F1 put out this awesome a message earlier today, and it says the ages of current grid when Raikkonen and Alonso made their debut in 2001. So Yuki was 9 months old.
Oh my
Norris
God.
Was a year. Michael Schumacher was a year. Mazepin was 2. Stroll was 2. Russell was 3. Leclerc was 3. Verstappen was 3. It shows the age of these two drivers. It's incredible. And I didn't mean to interject. I just wanted to share that because I thought it was kind of funny.
Well, now I'm extremely depressed that I'm an old man. So I think we're just going to end the show and just I'm going to go away and sulk for a little bit. But God, isn't that an amazing statistic when you look at that? But I mean, you just don't forget. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen as well, you know, that same generation. I mean, they were the kids that these guys like Lance and George Russell and Yuki Tsunoda and all these guys, you know, these youngsters that are just breaking into the sports now, that they are the guys now that Fernando and Kimi were in the early 2000s. That is really an eye-opening one that really kind of blows my mind. fine. But
yeah, you would have seen it earlier if you checked your Instagram DMs.
Well, moving right along from this awkward moment. Let's just go back to one of the old guys in the sport, Sebastian Vettel. You talked about him right off the top of the race. Very, very frustrating and disappointing weekend for him. He didn't qualify, didn't make it out of Q1, got investigated for ignoring or that yellow flag incident because we saw Mazepin spin off, which in turn one, which brought out yellows. Then Carlos Sainz was having issues. That brought up more waved yellows. So he didn't get in his hot lap. Ultimately, he didn't make it because of that. And then he had the penalty applied on top of it. And during the race, I mean, he showed a little bit, at one point. I mean, they were talking to Otmar Szafnauer, the team principal at Aston Martin, who seemed somewhat, I would say, cautious in saying that he was hoping they could get both cars into the points. Ultimately, Lance just kind of sneaked in there to score some points at the end. But Sebastian, did not look good. And we had another email from another listener, Ben Nylon. He's also a Gen DTS, and he weighed in on about Vettel. And he had to say, I thought it was a very good comment. He said, I would like to weigh in on how people view Vettel depending on what he does at Aston Martin. I believe that the fans who've been around for a while and saw him dominate the sport for years will always be able to remember that and give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, for the recent fans, especially Gen DTS, I believe we need to come out and have a strong year or two with Aston Martin because we've really just seen a guy who's getting towards the end of his career and almost needs to move on.
Okay, well, I want to interject.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Thoughts here.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I totally, totally get it. And I totally agree. And my fear, and I was talking to my buddy Randy about this on the weekend, I think you as well, that look, you know what, some of Vettel's performance last year could be attributed to the garbage power unit, the drag issues, et cetera. But Leclerc ran circles around him. And so you can maybe give him the benefit of the doubt for last year, but I've not seen anything of him yet in the Aston Martin. And I'm genuinely worried at this point. Like I don't think he's just forgotten how to drive, but I'm genuinely worried right now. And I'm no longer willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because I haven't really seen him racy now in a year and a half, 2 years. And to be honest, I haven't really seen him racy since halfway through 2019 when that power unit fiasco came. So how artificial was his performance potentially in 2018 and 2019 when they were running that illegal engine fuel map, right? Like how long has this been Sebastian Vettel? 2017, 2016? Like obviously his performance was artificially enhanced for a couple of years with Ferrari. We all know that. Last year, that enhancement aid was removed and he had a very poor year. And of course there was a whole bunch of kind of psychological issues I'm sure that were at play as well, but I haven't seen anything with Aston Martin. And I think one of the things that I think ultimately Formula One's going to have to look at doing is we're going to need longer winter testing because my fear is that if you're going to have drivers that change teams or you're going to have drivers that come up from the lower formulas, they need more time to get acquainted with the cars. And you saw this all over the place this weekend. You saw this with Sergio Perez. He struggled to get get the car together prior to the actual race. You saw this with Vettel, but I totally agree. Like I can absolutely understand why this Gen DTS is not willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because they've never seen anything other than this guy that we all talk highly about, but finishes in the bottom 15, bottom 20 in the race classification. So totally get it.
Well, I mean, you could even go back as far as 2014, the year, this final year of Red Bull, when he was partnered with Danny Ricciardo, and Ricciardo came out on top in that year between the two teammates. So,
you know, but people were making the same excuse for him that year too. That whole psychological, he's leaving the, like, that's a great point. Great point.
So, I mean, you could really dial this one back. I mean, it is really a real stark contrast to see, you know, the weekend that he had to the weekend that that Lance had. I thought that Lance had, you know, despite the P10, I mean, we know that they've got some issues with like these low rate cars and the new rules, and, you know, Mercedes and Aston Martin feel like they're the two teams that have really been impacted the most. But, you know, I was pleased with what I saw with Lance. Ultimately, I was a bit disappointed he only managed a P10, but kind of seems, you know, about right with where the car is right now. But I mean, he looked racy. He was mixing it up, but he didn't, you know, do anything stupid or get involved in anything that he shouldn't have. And I think ultimately, like I say, P10 might be disappointing for Lance, but I think that, you know, it was a well-earned point. You know, it's just disappointing for him that it wasn't more. And whereas, you know, I'm very buoyant and pleased with Lance, you know, notwithstanding, is this, you know, completely the opposite spectrum to what I saw from Vettel. And like you were just saying, I mean, I'm genuinely concerned with what I'm seeing from him as well. And he needs to turn it around really damn quick, or we know, based on what we've seen of some of the more, you know, personal, you know, images and videos and clips of Lawrence Stroll in DTS season 3, that this is a guy, he's not there to screw around. He's in Formula One to win. He wants to win as soon as possible. I mean, I know they've set this 5-year sort of time frame to win a championship. I don't think that he's going to sort of hang on in any aspect of this operation in this team any longer that he needs to, if he feels it's holding them back from where they want to be.
You know, I was thinking about this when I was out running yesterday. You'd made that great comment last week when we were talking about the Drive to Survive recap, and you'd made that comment about the fact that it's clear after watching Lawrence in these boardroom sessions that if Lance was to underperform, they would cut him loose. I got to think it might be the other way at the end of the season, right? Like, maybe it's not Lance that they ultimately, and again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. There's 22 races left in the season. There's tons of time, but ultimately maybe the conversation is reversed, right? Like, hey, Sebastian, gave you a seat and it's not working out. We'll buy out the rest of this deal and we'll move on. And again, it's super, super early and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but maybe the conversation is the reverse of what we thought it could potentially be.
Well, just before we wrap it up here, and I know this is kind of backtracking, you know, when we did the bonus show last week about DTS season 3, but that initial scene where they're in the boardroom and there's this very nervous looking engineer Simon starts talking about that, and the way that Lawrence was like glaring at him and kind of drilling him on the details. I'm not kidding, dude. I was sweating. I felt intimidated. This is something that happened almost a year ago. So I thought it was a very interesting kind of peek inside the operations at Aston Martin, and really just over the entire run of the entire series, that entire season, really convinced me that that this is 100% not a vanity project. I mean, he's invested serious money, not just in the race team, but also in the road cars that he wants, this is something that needs to happen and has happened as soon as possible. So, yeah. Anyways, I think that's all we got. Any other points that we want to touch on before we wrap it up?
One other thing real quick. I thought it was really interesting. I don't think this is something that most people would have picked up on. And to be totally honest, I didn't notice it myself. I'm stealing this from another podcast. But in the race classification on the left side of the screen, when you say the order of the racers, and they typically preface their position by the last three letters or the first three letters of their last name. So you'll see Ham, Bot, STR for Stroll. I thought it was very, 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 very cool that Michael Schumacher's decided to go with MSH for Michael Mick Schumacher, basically kind of building upon what his father did. So obviously his father wasn't able to use, because he raced at the same time as his brother, he wasn't able to use the last three letters or the first three letters of his last name. He had to use the first letter of his first name and the first two letters of his last name. But I thought it was cool that as kind of a tribute and to honor his father, he asked for the race classification to use that order of letters for his name. So it was kind of cool when you see the race classification that you saw that, you're like, oh yeah, just like his dad was. But I thought that was kind of cute. But other than that, nothing particularly crazy.
I must admit that I thought it was really cool to see the MSC up there as well. I noticed that it popped out right away. Because, like you say, back in the day, it was MSC and RSC, you know, for Michael and Ralph. And I kept thinking that, you know, because, you know, Mick had a bit of an off there as well today. And, of course, struggling in that Haas. And I thought, I hope by the time this is all said and done, that we're comparing him more to Michael than we do to Ralph, you know, in terms of, you know, where he sort of fits into the... you know, the what do you want, the pantheon of Schumacher Formula One drivers. But let's just say based on the weekend that Mick Schumacher had, he can only go up. And you know, despite the legend that his father was and the legendary you know, debut he had in Formula One, you know, there's a lot to live up to for Mick Schumacher. And certainly look forward to what he does, not just at Imola, but for the rest of the time that he's in Formula One. And I think with that, Mark, I think we're done. I certainly have nothing else to add. And with that, you know, thanks guys for weighing in on the poll. Thanks for the emails and the tweets. We'll be back in a couple of days with the regular show. If you want to get in touch, by all means, do so. Send us an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or on Twitter at scuderiaf1pod. And that's it. That's a wrap. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy your Monday. Hey, long weekend coming up. That's definitely something to look forward to. And until the next time we speak, have a great, you know, stay safe. Do all those good things. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye for now. Now.